May I see that announcement? So before I start something about the courses, I'd like to review just a little bit what our plan is. The plan is that on Saturday mornings, we have our open platform for guest speakers, primarily. And our integral learning paradigm exploration that we started last term will be continued in Saturday afternoons. And this will enable us, we hope, to explore more actively the ideas that we discussed last term, different approaches to learning. For example, we can go out to Nadakupam and experience the sociological dimension of future developments, contexts, patterns, problems, energies. We can go to Ange's pottery and get our hands wet and full of clay. We can go to Savitri's dance studio and experience movement. And we can maybe we can begin to develop activities in the community that have a deliberate educational content as part of the University of Human Unity structure, so that we at some point in the future project a course of activities that include philosophy and linguistics and psychology and also ecology and technology and social action, so that a student might, a graduate student who comes here to focus on architecture or ecology, could through this program come into contact with a much more integral spectrum of self-development. So that's the big idea. And we had a good experience with it last time, just hearing different approaches to learning and knowledge. So we may be able to bring that into a more active connectivity. And as part of that process, Dominique is doing research in the different centers and units that have educational potential, or which already have educational programs, or which are focused on research where a student could perhaps be an intern of some kind. So that's one aspect of the University of Human Unity idea, is to develop this network of learning potentials and integrate them. So that's to be pursued through the Saturday afternoon sessions, those potentials. And then on Monday evenings, we have at 4 o'clock, I believe, let's see, 4 o'clock theoretical linguistics, and at 5:15 or 5:30, the philosophy of evolution. And I'll give you a little introduction to that this morning, and perhaps Vladimir will also give an introduction to linguistics. And then on Wednesday evenings, we have Vladimir's Upanishads and Sri Aurobindo's poetry. And I'll give a short introduction to that this morning. That's how we've been thinking and planning so far this year, this new semester. Any questions about that? Any thoughts?
According to your explanation about Saturday afternoon, 4 to 5:30, all of that. In other words, the time can change, right?
Yes. Everything can change. This is an evolving universe. Good question. So we've recently been discussing the possibility of working closely with our website. We will open a group site for each subject, and everyone can enter the philosophy site or the linguistic site or the integral paradigm site and post there your reflections, have exchanges with other members of the group, read papers that are relevant, write poems. And then if we're in touch with, if this develops, if that medium of tracking is utilized, then during the week we can follow what we're thinking, what we're doing, and so on. And then when we come together for the next session, we will have read some of the material, we will have added to it some other perspectives, and we should be able to develop an ongoing dialogue, and at the same time, a documentation. I mean, the wonderful thing about last year is that because we were able to record most of our sessions and transcribe some of them and add papers related, we now have a quite copious record of the first term. Pardon me? Yeah, it's there. It's on the website. So, let me just add the website address here. Okay. When you open the website, right now you get a slideshow from last year, and then if you go to the menu at the top, you can click on Everything at a Glance, and then you get Everything at a Glance, and there you can click on Groups. Now, it's now front page. Okay, well, I wasn't sure because the last time I saw it, which was 2 days ago, it was not there yet. So when you open the website, you'll see Everything at a Glance. You can click on the group, the philosophy group or the linguistics group, and read what's going on there, and you'll see a menu on the side where you can create a page, send a message, respond to what's already there. And so this will be a learning process also. Some of us have already utilized that medium, and others haven't, and some have had difficulty with it. And so by making it a focus of this term, we will develop its potential. And Grace is ready to respond. You'll see Grace's name at the bottom. She's the sysop. And if you have a problem, you can send her a message. She has posted already there instructions about how to access everything. But if you're still somewhat computer illiterate and you're not able to weave through that network, then you can ask her for help. And the website itself can evolve then. It was just created during the last year, and it has many facilities which haven't been utilized at all. So we don't really know what its potential is and what it lacks and so on. But we will begin to discover that. And today I have brought hard copies of the two first sessions that I will be giving on Monday and Wednesday. So anyone who wants to take those this morning can do that. And I'm going to say a little bit about both of them, but probably not all of it, or much of it. Why should we undertake courses in Sri Aurobindo's poetry? And why should we undertake courses in the philosophy of evolution? Would you like to respond to those questions? You have an aspiration to go beyond that profound ignorance, do you? Yes, that is an innocent and admirable response. Yeah. She said that the pattern of evolution that we know about already and have had in the past can inform a future possibility. And so by familiarizing ourselves fully with that pattern that we have had and what is known about it, we may understand something that enables us to evolve further. It seems to me quite remarkable that Sri Aurobindo, the master yogi and the master of knowledge, I really hope to keep the fans, by the way, a little bit at least. It seems quite remarkable to me that he gave so much importance to this question. That he put so much energy into writing about it, because the force was there, the grace was there. Normally the yogi, as the mother said, projects the divine force, and the devotees absorb it, take it in like a sponge.
The devotees,
yes, the disciples receive the force, and that's the job of the yogi. But in Sri Aurobindo's case, even in 1940, we find him going back to the Life Divine and adding 450 pages, mostly about evolution. And not just about spiritual evolution, but also about natural selection. And when he writes in 1920, we find him in the Essays on Materialism and Evolution discussing, as we will find in our course, precise issues of the Darwinian conception and commenting on them. And Sri Aurobindo is known for being that philosopher who integrates the theory of evolution and spirituality. Spirituality for him is not just about enlightening the consciousness and discovering the soul. That's given in Indian tradition. And he says it's not enough. Why is it not enough? Because our evolutionary state is unsatisfactory. And Sri Aurobindo is very critical
of the condition of humanity, even though it is the robe of the divine. So in most spirituality, the robeness, the divine robeness, is enough to know, and the condition itself is irrelevant, illusion. Another thing that seems remarkable to me is that science has become totally preoccupied with this question of evolution also. Physicists, the physicists of the 20s and 30s became biologists. Erwin Schrödinger wrote in 1943, "What is life?" And he says it's time for us to broaden our conception of existence. What is mind? So this Aurobindonian structure of the threefold world, physical, vital, mental, gradually throughout the 20th century became a quite popular conception. Conrad Lorenz fully accepted the idea of the three planes, and he got the Nobel Prize for biology in 1972 or 73.
Lorenz.
Lorenz, yeah, Conrad Lorenz. So we will explore in our course the thinking, the development of thinking in the 20th century from Herbert Spencer, Charles Darwin, Julian Huxley, not at all in this time, because that's a completely different subject. If you'll notice, I'm speaking about evolution more biologically right now. Then there took place a development in evolutionary theory between 1930 and 1945, called the New Synthesis. And so then we have biologists like Ernst Mayr and Richard Dawkins and John Maynard Smith who carried the thinking of biological evolution very far. And Gould. I didn't say Gould, but Gould is also another issue. So we'll discuss these issues. But at the same time that development was going on, we have philosophers like Bergson and Whitehead and Sri Aurobindo who are pursuing the idea that a quantitative and qualitative analysis of process is never going to adequately describe and understand the interconnectedness and unity and direction that the intuitive mind can grasp. And so those philosophers pursued the intuitive, creative aspect of the question of evolution, while the great scientific minds pursued the process
aspect of evolution. So if we look at the whole spectrum of the theory of evolution, we have to recognize that it is a field of knowledge that leads us to accept pretty much without question that there is something in existence called evolution, something in nature. Nature evolves. There's plenty of evidence now that makes it generally acceptable. But do we know what that evidence is? Are we interested in knowing what that evidence is? Or do we simply want to accept it? And
is this has a kind of ordinary view in terms of, for instance, in the media, where you live in a very ordinary level, when you hear
yeah, well, I don't personally take journalists' opinions very seriously. Anyway, we have those opinions, and there's a very large body of opinion today in the world which says that there's no such thing as evolution, but still most of us are intelligent enough to know that that's probably not true. But then there is the spiritual approach. There are those who have intuitively grasped the meaning of evolution and have given it extraordinary importance. Thinkers like Bergson and Sri Aurobindo and Whitehead. And Whitehead is especially interesting because he says that human beings, in their process of civilization, have assigned importance to certain things, certain ideas, certain practices, certain ways of understanding things. And this ability to give importance to ideas and activities, values, constitutes civilization. And this ability to assign importance comes from a process of assembling information, assembling experience, gathering, intuiting that which is important. And this, he says, is philosophy. And he says it's very akin to poetry, that the philosophical process and the poetic process attempt to gather and express those things that for the human being have utmost importance. And so, if in our age of civilization, our foremost thinkers and even poets
are giving utmost importance to this idea of evolution. We may be able to enter into a process of assembling ideas, information, intuitions, gathering them into a vision of what it is. And for Sri Aurobindo, we know that he felt and he practiced, his example is that by knowing what it is, one enters into the process of evolution consciously, and then there is a potential for participating actively in the process itself. Not just knowing about it, not just having faith in it. So we have to recognize, first of all, I think, that there are two approaches. There is the spiritual approach, and there is the scientific approach. And mostly what we know about evolution comes from evidence that is collected empirically. And that evidence is mental. Our understanding of evolution is mental understanding. The mind somehow has evolved in life and matter in such a way that it perceives something called evolution. And it describes something called evolution. It knows, it understands something called evolution. And that mind also expands and intuits, in a more spiritual sense, not so much the empirical evidence, although it's there, but it also intuits a totality in space and time, past, present, and future, of the progress of life and the values of life and the aims of life. So from both approaches, the spiritual, which is based upon faith and vision, and the scientific empirical function of mind, both approaches have been preoccupied with this knowledge. These are what I call the two tracks of the pursuit of knowledge of evolution. And both have produced incredible, wonderful discoveries and articulations, expressions. You know, Whitehead's philosophy has blossomed in the human realm. The discovery of the importance of evolution has happened along both of these tracks, and both tracks have elevated that discovery to a level where humanity is in its grasp. And so today you find the media reports, the journalistic, scientific interpretation, you find the television series Heroes, which just started last year, and I have all of the CDs, and we can watch some of those. But you know also about X-Men, the comic book series. If you read that comic book, it's incredible, really, what those comic book writers have understood. X-Men. So you will become informed about all of these things in this course. Anyway, there's a popular culture of evolution of beyond the human today, vast and in all languages and cultures. This idea of the possible further evolution of humanity has gripped the imagination of the species.
What about this American woman, Bob or something or other? Hubbard.
Yeah. So I'm not going to pursue much the New Age popular literature in my course. I'm going to pursue the scientific approach and the philosophic approach. And the aim is that by reaching a philosophic, in the Whiteheadian sense, a philosophic understanding of the importance of evolution based upon a comprehensive knowledge of what is known scientifically, a knowledge of the scientific evidence, we can take a step in the direction that Sri Aurobindo suggested when he said that these two will converge. Because the faith-based, spiritual, intuitive, creative conception doesn't yet tell us anything about the process. And the process approach doesn't tell us anything about how the higher consciousness force is related to the lower prakriti. Sri Aurobindo accomplishes a solution to the mind-body problem. And so by giving us the threefold world of evolution, mental, vital, and physical, and by telling us that all three are prakriti, mind is no more or less consciousness than the bird building its nest and the phosphorus molecules in the enzymes of the nerve synapses that enable us to function intelligently. These are three levels of consciousness: the physical, the vital, and the mental. And it is a threefold evolutionary world. And this idea, as I said, has been accepted more and more by Lorenz and Karl Popper and Fritz Capra and so on. So this, in the 20th century, just like physics and biology and psychology, psycholinguistics and so on, have become integrated, this conception of physical, vital, and mental, the physical, vital, and mental world being one world, has become quite generally accepted. And the fact that that world is evolving has become quite generally accepted. But the spiritual approach to that knowledge, that intuitive, creative identity with the process, still doesn't yield knowledge of the process. And the process approach, the scientific analytical process, still doesn't give us information about the transfer from the Chit Shakti Param Purusha and the lower Prakriti. We can go fully into the ecstatic higher mind intuition of evolution and have faith that it's going on, and we can go fully into the incremental understanding of how the how and why the certain bacteria united to form the mitochondria in the cells, and that our own functioning is the result of a couple of billion years of vital process. But neither one of those approaches gives us a grasp of the relationship, because so far that convergence hasn't happened. And if we begin to approach a philosophic comprehension of the total mind field regarding evolution, we lay the foundation for a movement in civilization that is the that can be the basis for another consciousness. It's an exploration which has been suggested to us.
Another consciousness, or
another consciousness, yes.
Same consciousness made higher?
Another consciousness. Yes, it will make consciousness higher and more plastic and more interesting, but there is still the possibility of a direct, as Sri Aurobindo, this is the theme of Sri Aurobindo's teaching, there is the possibility of a Gnostic consciousness which is not spiritual, which is not material, it's integral. So the philosophy of evolution also doesn't yet exist. It has to be created. We have a science of evolution and we have a religion of evolution, but we don't yet really have a philosophy of evolution. There is a philosophy of science which has been contributed to substantially by biologists in the last 20 or 30 years. I have a book called The New Philosophy of Biology by Ernst Mayr. And it's Ernst Mayr is very well known to be the paradigm of Darwinian thought. He just died last year at the age of 99, I think, and at the age of 98 he published a new book called What is Evolution? a really extraordinary person, and he is responsible for what is called the New Synthesis, which took place in 1945. And Erwin Schrödinger was right there in 43 saying we have to synthesize physics and biology, genetics and Darwinian theory. And it was done, it was accomplished. So we need to learn about that synthesis. We need to realize that Sri Aurobindo was putting extraordinary pressure in 1940 and in 1931 and in 1950. He was putting extraordinary pressure on this possibility of synthesis, of integration, of consciousness, of participation, you know, the potential for participation in this process of which we are a part, in which we are grounded. So in recent times, Daniel Dennett, who is the foremost philosopher of evolution today,
said in 95, just to show you that the materialists are getting somewhere. Yeah, all of this material will be available to those who take the course. Don't worry about it. You'll get it. You'll get, if you take the course, you'll get all the material. He says, a proper application of Darwinian thinking suggests that if we survive our current self-induced environmental crisis, our capacity to comprehend will continue to grow by increments that are now incomprehensible to us. This, he says, Darwinian thinking suggests. Capacities which are now incomprehensible to us. So when we speak about another possibility of consciousness, a Gnostic possibility, you see, Sri Aurobindo has spoken at length about those possibilities which are incomprehensible to us. He says there's no point in trying to understand what the supramental consciousness is or can do. It's incomprehensible to us. It works in matter. It makes our connectedness on the physical and vital plane different. And so, to take another empirical point of view, Whitehead said, this planet, or this nebula in which our sun is placed, may be gradually advancing towards a change in the general character of its spatial relations. Perhaps in the dim future, mankind, if it then exists, will look back to the queer, contracted, three-dimensional universe from which the nobler, wider existence has emerged. That nobler, wider existence is a moral concept. It's a philosophic notion. For both the materialist and the spiritualist, from whom I just read examples, evolution, the idea of evolution, is a philosophic and scientific concept that has the potential, the promise, of leading, progressing in our consciousness, in our lives, in our civilization, towards a truer, freer, more perfect embodiment of consciousness, the robe. the robe of consciousness becomes more perfect, nobler, wider, more divine. I read a letter from Sri Aurobindo the other day in which he said to someone, "Yes, everything is the divine, but some things are more divine than others." So I think I'll stop there. That's the introduction to the philosophy of evolution.
That was animal farm, wasn't it? Yes, we are all equal, but some are equal than others.
Right. That's exactly right. Yeah, well, that's the religious conception, and I accept it completely, but it's only half of the picture. And I think it's important for us to understand the relationship between the evolving will and power in manifestation and the descending force of consciousness. And Sri Aurobindo's unique contribution to the idea is that there are both of those aspects, that there is a descending pressure from the vital plane which brings about the evolution of life, and that there is a descending pressure from the mental plane which brings about the evolution of mind. But let's remember that this idea is absolutely unique to Sri Aurobindo. So the next thing is the introduction to poetry.
One more point to this.
Okay.
Because it's important what you said. And I think the evolution comes to the level where the cooperation, conscious cooperation of man, becomes a part of that what you said. So nature cannot anymore rely on its own natural evolution. It requires conscious participation by man, evolving to the stage where he can create forms nature creates through him. So it is still natural process, it is still that divine process, but it is already with participation, conscious participation. It makes sense.
And one other comment is that idea can be called spiritual determinism. There's also, from the scientific point of view, something called materialistic determinism. So it's possible for us to understand very clearly both of those ideas and to critique them, because neither one is correct. And so the people who are engaged, like Dinit, the really bright minds that are engaged in studying empirical evolution, have destroyed the idea of determinism. Dinit's most important book is called Freedom Evolves, and it is a complete destruction of the idea of materialistic determinism. So it's also possible to destroy the idea of spiritual determinism, but it has value. There's no reason to destroy it completely, and material determinism also has value. So by
understanding really what is the meaning of materialistic determinism, and what are its limitations, and what is the meaning of spiritual determinism, and what are its limitations. Then we move towards an integral consciousness. Because Sri Aurobindo, I believe, entertains all of these possibilities. And we can see what his conception is. If we ask the question, if we gather, if we assemble, if we unify all of the conceptions that are most relevant to the question of evolution, then each of us individually will find that we go through a process of insight, and then that insight is transformed and we have another insight, and we gradually expand beyond any particular limited conception. We understand all of those conceptions and we put them in perspective, and we begin to see not so much theoretically, but we can move beyond that into a life world conception. We can do the phenomenological reduction. We can bracket each of these. And we can try to become conscious of these planes themselves that are in which we are grounded, and the energies of these planes themselves. This is where Sri Aurobindo is pushing. It's not, there's no point in being satisfied with the conception that the vital, the mental, and the physical are integrated, and the plane of the supermind is pressing down to evolve something from mind, which is new. I mean, this is a conception that we can all accept. But does it open the way for us to grasp the process itself and participate actively in the process itself?
So the idea of yoga just has already this,
the yoga of knowledge.
Yeah, that's already this, to end the.
Yeah, right, exactly. So the yoga of knowledge should bear fruit. Also, as someone said to me the other day who works in Oroville very effectively, we do, the devotion is not a problem for us and the work is not a problem for us, but the knowledge is not something that we necessarily access all the time in the way that is possible. And this is the devotional approach.
The second one.
Yeah.
And the first one, content to be spiritualized.
Okay. What does it mean to be content to be spiritualized? I mean, if your mind is spiritualized, I'm sure it will be content, but it will also have knowledge. And so, yes, I think we should be content to have a spiritualized mind and life and body. And I think along that road there are avenues of development that can be actively pursued. So I think that creating a philosophy of evolution can be a tool. And it's a different tool from just surrendering and offering. They go together, but there is something to be surrendered and there is something to be offered, and knowledge is one of those things.